This is the VeriSage Podcast, a casual conversation about professional knowledge workers and the relationships they have with their firms and customers.
Well, welcome to our first VeriSage Podcast. My name is Ed Kless, and with me is Ron Baker, co-founder of the VeriSage Institute. This is the first of what we hope to be many podcasts regarding the subject of pricing with purpose and other topics related to professional knowledge firms. So we're just going to chat around a very conversational type format for you. So Ron, welcome.
Thank you, Ed.
And what I'd like to first do is let's define for the folks a couple of, these are just some questions that we're going to wrap about today that are very often asked when you and I both do presentations on this material. So the first one, let's start at the very beginning, is what is value pricing?
All right, we get this one a lot because a lot of people, as you know, call it value billing. And since we're so persnickety with the words that we use, when I think of value billing, that means actually we bill in arrears after the work is done. And the reason we call it value pricing is because pricing requires us to set and establish a price up front before we do the work, just like most other businesses on the planet do, and give the customer the certainty so the customer can make an informed buying decision and compare the price to the value. Because after all, I think most professionals rather find out that the customer doesn't like the price before they do the work rather than after.
Yeah, I mean, I've often said that the phrase value billing would probably be illegal when you think about it.
One of our colleagues called it mail fraud.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the other thing is billing, you know, conjures up negative connotations too. I mean, who likes to receive bills? Who likes to have a fee imposed? I think of the DMV fee or a government tax. And we try and use words that are more neutral or more benign and don't have a lot of baggage associated with them, so they don't conjure up negative things in the customer's mind. And price is a very benign word. We're all very used to asking, what's the price? So even though we don't advocate using value pricing in terms of with the customer, we actually like the term fixed price agreement with the customer because fixed implies certainty. So the words that we use are really important.
Right, and there is a difference. That's another question that I'm often asked is what's the difference between a value price and a fixed price, or are they the same thing is really how it's phrased? They're not. There's a distinction that I make. And that is a value price is a fixed price, but not all fixed prices are value prices.
Correct. I think when a lot of people talk about fixed price, they're actually just computing it based upon an hourly rate. And that's not really commensurate with the value of what you're providing. And that's kind of how I think about it. And it's interesting because as you said that, I've been thinking about this too. And it's, you know, it's not always necessarily true that a fixed price is a value price. A value price can be open-ended, for example, if you use the tip clause.
Right, we've even taken lately to changing even the term value pricing to pricing with purpose or pricing on purpose. Wanted you to talk a little bit about why that is. I think that's a fascinating dialogue as well.
Yeah, I think value pricing has a lot of negative connotations. You know, you see signs in Walmart or, you know, on drugstore windows, value priced, you know. And everybody draws their own perception or definition of that term. And mostly it's associated with low prices. But as you know, I mean, we define value very, very specifically as, you know, the subjective theory of value and value is in the eye of the beholder, like beauty. And so to me, value pricing has a very, very specific definition, but in the common usage, it's kind of associated more with low price. So why we like pricing on purpose, and that's the title of my book, and you like to say pricing with purpose, and I like both. Actually, I fought with my editor about both of those titles because they're both good, is because we're saying that pricing is an art and it should become a core competency within a firm. And so we want you to price on purpose. In other words, if you set a price, it shouldn't just be tactical. It should be very, very strategic and fit in with your company's strategy and purpose, not just to make the sale.
Yeah, it's very interesting, Ron, because like you said, there's the Walmarts of the world, and not that I'm anti-Walmart, have co-opted the term value to mean low price. Yet at the same time, one of the things I think among professionals is that value pricing has also been equated with gouging. So we have the both extremes that are used in the connotation of value pricing. And you know, to me, value pricing is not gouging, and that's one of the key things that I have to dispel on a regular basis.
Right. This idea that you can gouge somebody by discussing the price up front, it just defies common sense. I mean, if the client thinks that it's gouging, then they don't have to accept the price. I think hourly billing lends itself to gouging, because there the client had no say beforehand about what the price was going to be, and they only found out about it when they opened up the invoice. And I think that lends itself more to the complaint of gouging than actually discussing the price up front.
Right. And what I find too is that, and even professionals don't believe that that's the case. They say, well, but we set the fee ahead of time. But yes, they all have in their proposals, this is an estimate, or the price will actually be reflected in actual hours worked.
Right.
Not really a fixed price that they're giving, or it's not really they're not giving a price up front. I mean, I get into an argument or just recently with somebody who said, but I do give a price up front. It's $150 an hour.
Yes, that's not a price. That's a basis of a price.
That's right.
And then they'll quote a range, and of course that sets them up for failure, because the client always, or the customer always, hears the low end of the range, and you know, we hear the high end of the range. And you know, the point is, hey, if you're smart enough to quote a range, then why don't you just quote the high end of the range and leave it at that? I think we quote ranges because it makes us feel good. It does nothing for the customer. I mean, imagine pulling down a box of cereal and seeing a range of prices on it. It'd be just stupid.
Right, and it amazes me. In fact, I was with someone yesterday, and this is just in relationship to this concept of a range in general, where they were putting together a service level agreement, and they said our response time is going to be between 3 and 4 hours. And I said, well, this is just ridiculous, because you're setting yourself. What's the customer going to hear when you say between 3 and 4 hours? 3. What do you think? 4. You know,
exactly.
So just say 4, or just say 3. Pick.
Right.
You know, why set yourself up for that? And the other one that we are persnickety on languages, and I hear this all the time in project management. Well, we'll deliver that to you ASAP. Well, ASAP is perhaps the dumbest thing anyone can ever say, because it means the exact opposite in the mind of the sender and receiver, right?
Exactly. Yeah. My ASAP would be far different from yours.
Exactly, and that's where tying it back is that's unfortunately what a range does when you quote a range of hours. It's usually the exact opposite.
Right. You know, if you think about it, Ed, it's so funny. If you just think about FedEx, and look how precise they are with their timetables. You know, do you want it there before 8:30? Do you want it there before 10:30? 1:30? You know, if they can do it and they're doing global shipping, why can't we?
Exactly. So, one of the questions that I get most often is, well, this is great and all, but I really struggle with helping my customers understand what the value of my work is. And
yeah.
You know, my immediate advice always is to read one of the many books that you and I recommend on a regular basis, and that is Mahan Khalsa's Let's Get Real or Let's Not Play, because I think he delivers an excellent mechanism for really a line of questioning that helps really the customer, and you're just the asker of the questions, get to underlying value.
Absolutely. The part of comprehending the value drivers for each customer, because they are going to be different, and then being able to communicate that value, this is such a critical thing. It's part of the 5 C's of value that we talk about. And if a firm it doesn't have a pricing cartel or a chief value officer, they're not paying any attention to the value that they actually provide to their clients on an ongoing basis. So this is why we advocate that a pricing cartel, you know, this is one of the things that they would study. What value did we produce for this client? And, you know, that would help us with pricing future engagements as well.
Here's one that drives me absolutely insane, and I know it makes you violent sometimes as well, but can you price based on value in a market where it is viewed as commodity-driven?
Absolutely, because for starters, there's no such thing as a commodity, and anything can be differentiated, as Theodore Levitt taught us. I have a whole chapter in my book, Pricing on Purpose, that there's no such thing as a commodity, and give example after example of all these very mature industries like candles and you know, one share of stock and for goodness sakes, lettuce, you know, that is differentiated and commands a premium price. And who better to differentiate a product or a service than a professional knowledge firm, because it's only limited by your imagination. There are things that you can bundle in just for something as simple as unlimited access. Hey, you can call us or meet with us anytime. And if you have accounting customers or legal firm customers, that is a phenomenal bundle, which are going to drive up the value of even the low end of the value curve type services. So I do think it's possible to value price in a quote unquote commodity market. I mean, just look at Southwest Airlines. Here's a company whose whole business model is to be the low cost airline, but they still value price. Every time I pull up a Southwest fare, I get four or five different options. You know, do I want it refundable? Do I want to be able to change it? And so even their value pricing, and they're at the low end of the spectrum.
You know, as we've talked, I've never heard you give that specific example, and you're right. You know, Southwest Airlines is the only one that provides options when you go in and purchase an airline ticket. I mean, other than first class or coach.
Right, and it's quite a range too. I mean, some, like for instance, if I want to fly to L.A. From San Francisco, it could be $39 one way, or it could be as high as $109. Now, compared to United, that's a cheap fare no matter which one of those you pick. But within Southwest's pricing paradigm, I'll tell you, a $70 difference is enormous. And that is value pricing.
This has been the VeriSage Podcast. Thanks for joining us. More information about VeriSage can be found at www.verasage.com.